Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome, welcome wherever you are. I'm always so glad to be able to connect with you as we work together to find hope for healthy parenting, and we really, really need it. You know, there has been a lot of scary news, especially in the last month. I mean, we just live in a world where every day we turn on the radio and we think, oh my gosh, this world is so terrible, or we see headlines on the TV and we can be overwhelmed by that. But it seems like in the last month, we've just seen more stories of kids disappearing or being abducted or encountering just our worst nightmare as parents. And a lot of times as I go around, I hear people say, you know, oh, I can't imagine raising kids in today's world. And from my friend Lauren Gaines, she actually posted about this morning saying, instead of saying, I don't envy you raising kids in today's world and I feel sorry for parents today, what if we had messages like this? You were made to parent in this moment. And God put you in this generation for such a time as this. And before the beginning of time, God created good works for you to complete. I think these kinds of messages are really important as we parent today. And parenting is really hard. We are facing challenges that previous generations did not face. And especially with this technical revolution, it has just been heartbreaking. And so today I wanted to take some time to answer some questions that I've been getting. And I get a lot of questions about a lot of things, but by far and away, the topic that is number one on parents' list, that is always at the top of my email box, that is always at the top of my appointment screen, at the top of my students' questions, is technology and social media. And it feels like no matter how much we talk about it, there are still questions, there are still struggles. And so I wanted to take some time today, like I said, just to answer some of those questions and to do a little talking about social media. Now, before we do that, I think it's really important to go back and invite you to the 52 Habits for Healthy Parenting. This is what I'm doing this year. If you just listen to the show every week, I'm talking about a healthy habit for parenting. And this week, our habit is affirmation, words of affirmation. I'm going to talk about this a lot more on the show tomorrow. So be sure to tune in for Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday, where I'll talk about it more. But let me read to you and share with you from Proverbs 16:24. This Bible verse says, "Gracious words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the body." And we have to remember, parents, that as we are living in this world where we are constantly afraid and it seems dark and we're getting these awful messages, our kids are living in that world too. And our kids are hearing those messages, and our kids are seeing our eyes glued to the screen, watching scary headlines and telling them all of the things that we're afraid of. And they need more than ever our words of affirmation. They need our confidence, even if it feels shaky on the inside. But kind words go a long, long way in a world where words really are used as weapons. Words have been weaponized more than ever before, because in previous generations, words would be said, and yes, they would hurt us, and yes, we would carry them with us, and all of us can still think of words that were said that were painful to us when we were children. But now those words are in black and white on a screen. They are made viral. They go around the world. They live in digital witness forums where everyone is looking and everyone can see what was said. Whereas before, when we were growing up, maybe somebody heard it, maybe they didn't, maybe they heard about it. But this is just right there on social media for everyone to hear. And that is really, really hard. And, you know, we hear the phrase that sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never harm me. That is an absolute lie. Words are some of the most destructive forces that are coming at our kids today. And so I encourage you, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, take some time, no matter the age of your child, to send a message of specific affirmation today. Tell your child, praise their character traits that you love. Don't just praise something that they do. Praise who they are. Send them a text message. If they're little, go get on their eye level and tell them how special they are, how courageous they are, how honest they are, how joyful they are. Just give them positive words of affirmation. So I'm sharing this because this is one challenge that I'm going to take on for myself for the remainder of the school year, because if you have kids in school like me, let's be honest, we all get on the struggle bus, right? Like nobody wants to make any more lunches or do any more tests or, you know, grade any more homework assignments, but we can be there. But what I'm going to do, and I should say I'm able to tell you this because I do have teenage boys who sadly do not listen to the Dr. Nurse Mama show because they say POV, my mom's voice is good ASMR for sleeping. But my husband does. So honey, hey, out there, we are going to have a sticky note campaign for our boys who are at home. And every day I am going to put a sticky note on their door with a message of affirmation. But here is the catch. I'm not going to expect anything in return. I'm not going to expect their attitude necessarily to change or for them to come and just, you know, clasp my hands and say, oh, mother, thank you so much. You just helped me to get through that last bit of school. No, I'm going to do it because as a parent, I know that I invest what I think is wise and I leave it to God to grow those seeds, to bring the harvest in due time, because planting and harvesting do not happen in the same season. And as parents, we have got to get rid of this instant gratification mindset where we're expecting an immediate feedback loop from our kids to say, oh, we modified our behavior for 1 second. We want them to change and say, oh yeah, that was good. You did a good job. When we don't do the same for them, you know, when they change, when they're struggling with something and they may try to change their behavior, we're instantly suspicious. So I'm just giving a word of encouragement out there, a great way to breathe oxygen into your family, into a season of conflict, into a season of struggle, into a season where your kid is just experiencing a lot of challenges, are affirmation, words of affirmation. So again, I'm going to read to you Proverbs 16:24. Gracious words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the body. So, you know, for me as a nurse practitioner, I love this because words literally impact our health. Kind words can lower our blood pressure, lower our stress hormone secretion. I mean, they can do so many things. So just wherever you are, whatever you're doing, take a minute to give some kind words to your kiddos, whether they're toddlers or teens or they're all the way out in the world. And, you know, I'll tell you, my kids' grandparents are really, really good about this, about sending words of affirmation and text messages to my kids. And sometimes they respond and sometimes they don't, but I'm so appreciative of that. So especially for you grandparents out there, take time to send your grandkids words of affirmation. Even if they don't give you an immediate thank you, it really does make a big difference. So when talking about social media, those are words where our kids are putting out words into the world. They're reading words that come into the world. And one of the things that's really concerning to me is some recent research that came out showing that this generation of kids is less happy than previous generations. Their happiness, their contentment is less. And we all know this has to do with social media. And it's not in and of itself a bad thing. But let me share with you, you know, regardless of where you are in, you know, looking at politics, the fact that the United States Surgeon General is concerned about this cuts through all of that. And he has been talking about it for a long time. And it's been interesting because this is Dr. Vivek Murthy that I'm talking about, but he shared his experience going to places like to universities around the country. And what he found was that so many young people were plugged into their earphones, they were on their laptops, they had headphones on, that it was just very quiet on college campuses, that people were not talking. And that is what is happening, and that's the onset of social media and phones. And one of the things we are not talking about as families, we talk a lot about the evils that social media can have on our teens' mental health, but we are not talking enough, in my opinion, about how detrimental it is to relational health, and especially in the families, because we don't know how to have conversation with each other. And I want you to think back to how families used to be, you know, before technology, you know, they would gather in a room where there was a singular light source so that they could conserve energy, and they might read a book together, or they might tell stories, or, you know, work on sewing or something like that. But they were all gathered around one light source, one heat source, and they were together and they were talking. And as we've had more and more technology, we have more ways to connect with people all over the world, but more relational disconnect. And I think this is one of the reasons why I'm getting so many calls and so many questions from so many families, because we have an addiction to our screens. We have a screen dependency disorder as a nation. And we're quick as parents to point our fingers at our kids and say that it's their problem. But it impacts parents all across the spectrum, all across the age spectrum. And I think, and I say this very carefully and very tenderly, but I think about my first days of mothering before smartphones happened. And I think about all those times I had to get up in the night to feed or change a baby. I didn't have a smartphone to look at, and I can't tell you how many times I see mothers who are feeding their babies, and their babies are looking up at them, wanting a connection and looking for that eye contact, and we're just glued to our phones. Now, I'm just as guilty as a mom of a teenager now, but I think even starting that early, so many times our attention is taken by our phones. And until we accept accountability for that as parents, I don't think that we're really going to be able to effectively change our kids' behaviors. Now, listen to this. Screens impact our brains, like their dopamine and serotonin reward systems, in the same way substances do. So when we look at neurological imaging, we see brains lighting up with a hit of drugs, as the same as our digital drug. And social media is really, especially, like it's a process addiction. So it's like a slot machine. You know, you think about, if you've seen slot machines, you pull it to refresh, or even, you know, pulling that lever and getting a hit of dopamine. That's what's happening on social media. When you post something, when you see somebody like it, it's like that slot machine is going off, and that constant scroll, the bright lights, wanting to find something valuable, because we think, oh, I'll just watch one more, because the truth is we are scrolling through our phones to numb our anxiety, numb our depression, numb our worries, numb our fears, just trying to find something that will distract us and make us laugh. And it is such a waste of time. And I'm guilty of it too. How many times do you get on your phone and you realize, oh my gosh, it's been 2 hours, or it's been an hour that I've just been sitting here scrolling and not even aware of the time? And for kids, that pull is so much stronger. And the takeaway is emotionally more intense. When we take it away, it feels like withdrawal. And that's where I'm seeing a lot of questions, where parents are saying, my kids are absolutely losing their minds. They're screaming, they're yelling, they're throwing things, they're trying to hurt me when I take their device away. Parents, this is a problem. And it is time for us to step up as parents and not be afraid to be the parent. There will be a time in our kids' lives where we can be their friends, but at this point in time, they need us to set tough boundaries, and they need us, most of all, to set those boundaries for ourselves, because those kinds of habits are going to be caught and not taught. Now, you may be thinking, oh my goodness, I know, I feel so guilty about this. This is something I constantly struggle with. Well, when we come back, I'm going to give you some tips. We'll walk through some ways that we can do that together, and I'll talk about how to reset boundaries in your home. This is the fight of our generation. This is the most important thing that we can do in fighting for their hearts and souls and relationship. I'll be right back. Tell you more. Little things can make a difference. A little note, a little smile, the small stone that David hurled at Goliath, and precious little babies. When you sponsor an ultrasound at preborn, your gift, no matter how small, makes a difference in a big way. Who will this little baby become? What giants will this baby slay? How about the mother who was spared from unspeakable sorrow because of you? You never know the difference you're going to make with a donation of just $28 to introduce a mother to her child through ultrasound, which doubles a baby's chance at life. All you have to do is take a few small minutes to make a life-saving donation. Preborn will take it from there as their network of clinics rescues 200 tiny babies every day and shares God's love with mothers. Preborn has a 100% charity rating, so you can give with confidence. Get involved today by dialing #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends, and welcome back to this really important conversation. And if I'm honest, it's super convicting. It's something that I definitely struggle with and I have been talking about a lot. We're talking about social media and screen time, and these are all of the questions that I am getting. But for what makes me concerned, like I shared in the first segment, for the first time since data has been collected on happiness on young people in North America, they are less happy than older generations. And social disconnection in our country has led to a 29% increase in the risk of heart disease, 32% increase in the risk of stroke, and 50% increase in the risk of dementia among older adults. This was, of course, made just infinitely worse by the social media isolation that happened with COVID. And also, I've seen the Surgeon General say that there's been a 70% decrease between 2000 and 2020. In those 20 years, 70% decrease in the amount of in-person time young people in the United States spend with their friends. 70%. I cannot wrap my mind around that. Meanwhile, kids across the country have taken a part-time job or a full-time job, working anywhere from 5 to 9 hours a day on their social media. I mean, this is a really big problem, and they are being fed a diet of headlines that are constantly telling them how bad the world is, it's broken, it's bleak, all of these people are experiencing abuse and exploitation and violence and war and all of these things. And you wonder why kids are depressed. Like, we as adults can't handle that very well, much less kids. They are much more susceptible to depression and anxiety that happens with that. And then we combine the social media companies that try to make their platforms addictive. They work constantly on this because time spent on there is more advertising time to sell. It's more information to collect. That's more financial gain for tech companies. And that is addictive. And it damages self-esteem, and it erodes time available for other activities. So parents, here's the thing. We're constantly, you know, thinking we have to get off our screens. We've got to turn this off. We've got to get off your phone. And we think about just eliminating that negative, influence. But that's not enough. We have to replace it with a positive influence, a positive activity. We have to provide relational interactions that are more attractive and more compelling than the digital interactions. And that's what we're up against. That's a tall order. That is really difficult. But instead of saying, get off your phone, say, hey, let's go get some ice cream. Hey, let's go for a walk. Give them something positive. Now, again, as kids may do, they may complain, they may roll their eyes, they may say they don't want to go, but God made our children to crave interaction with us. They crave our approval. And regardless of popular conception, they care much more about what we think about them than what their friends think about them. And so we have got to find a way to nurture relationship interactions with our kids. And what I see is in this terms of addiction, if you think that you are addicted to your phone or a screen or some technology, a gaming console, or your child is, here are some signs to watch for. You need to watch for if you're obsessing or planning over obsessing over access to screens or planning to access screens. If everything revolves around where am I going to have a screen? When am I going to have a screen? When are we going to play? When are we going to interact? When are we going to go live? And you're just thinking about it all the time, like getting back to your screen. Or if you find yourself in the afternoons after school or after work or most evenings or weekends engaged more in a screen than you are in real life, that's a problem. If you find a social emotional disconnection where you prefer to be around screens than you prefer to be around people, that's a sign of a problem. If you're thinking, no, I'd rather just stay in and watch Netflix or whatever it is, and that's all the time. I mean, obviously, some of us are introverted and that's totally fine. But if you're constantly preferring a screen, you'd rather engage with a screen than people, that's a problem. And then what we see, one of the most severe signs, is emotional dysregulation when that screen is removed. That's where I was talking about before. When kids lose their mind and they're violent or they have an outburst. I have seen kids as young as 9 physically attack their parents when the gaming console is removed. But here's the thing, parents, we have got to be the parents and we have got to reset our boundaries. And it is totally okay to do that. It's perfectly okay to reset boundaries because you may be learning more about what you need to do and then your kids just give you an all-out revolt when you try to change boundaries. And we think that a lot of times the questions that I've been getting are, you know, well, I've let my kid have this social media app and now it's consumed all their time and I'm just not sure what to do. Or I get a question, I've put 7 different monitoring softwares on my kid's phone and they've figured out how to take all of them off. What do I do? Well, these are times when we have to be content with making our kids upset and know that they're not going to like it. And that's okay. Because sometimes as parents, we think that once we grant a privilege, it somehow becomes irrevocable. Like, oh, I've said you can date or I said you can have social media. Now I can't take it back. Well, here's the empowerment. You can take it back. You can absolutely take it back. It is easy to do. It really is. And sometimes our kids, you know, we might just learn some new perspective, that learn some new information that changes our perspective. And so we are afraid. We're super afraid that this conflict is going to set back any progress that we've made and it will snap any fragile connection that you've worked so hard to build. Like maybe you're finally in a good place because you let them have the social media platform and you see this little glimmer of hope. But it is okay to reset boundaries, even if they protest in dramatic fashion. So if you do it calmly and do it confidently. You can say, I learned some new information that is going to help better guide my decision making, and we're going to have to reset some boundaries for your health and safety. I realize you may not like it, but it is my job as your parent to do what is right for you. And then just do it. Reset it. Give yourself some grace. These are new things that are changing all the time, and we just don't know what we don't know, and that's okay. It's hard to even know what we need to know. So tell yourself you're doing the very best you can with what you know, and when you know more, you'll do better. So that is important. So you can talk to your teens or your children and ask them what privileges they have that they value the most. Ask them why they value those privileges and then talk about what are the responsibilities that you are showing to show that you're capable of having that privilege, because privileges and responsibilities should always be balanced and always go hand in hand. And, you know, there's times where parents, we can't say a long lecture. You can't lecture your way to leverage behavioral change, an hour-long lecture on this. It's not going to be very helpful. You can't argue your way into right relationships. So if you need to change those boundaries or reset them, then just reset them and then end the conversation and just say, this is the end of the conversation. I'll be glad to talk to you about it at another time if you have questions, and you need to be respectful when you come to me with them. And then you can open up that conversation. But it is so important to do that, because when I look especially at social media, this is just the most common question I get. When should my child be able to have social media? My answer is wait as long as you possibly can. Just wait, because there is no good in doing it earlier. And the longer that you wait, the more time their brain has to develop, the more capacity they have for making abstract decisions, and the more likely they are going to be able to recognize threats. Because here's the thing, kids have underdeveloped character to handle social media overexposure. They're just not equipped for it. And their online platform growth, how many friends they have, how many followers they have, it can quickly exceed or be out of sync with their character development. And so what that means is that they're at risk for making a very small mistake on a very big stage that can seriously impact their view of themselves and their view of the future. So they're not developing abstract thinking until late in their teenage years. And so they don't interpret why somebody posted something similar to them and got so many likes, and they posted something else and they got so many hates or so many negative comments. That can be really, really hard. And what we're seeing in the emerging science on teen brain impacts of social media use says that these significant emotional responses surrounding the sensitivity of feeling accepted and the compulsion to conform with those peers by obeying those who are perceived as socially superior. Now, you might be wondering, what in the world did I just say? Kids will bow to social pressure from those who seem to have more social capital than they do. So the cool kids, if the cool kids say to do it, they don't see a way out of it. And their emotions are intense surrounding this. And they are particularly susceptible to sensationalist and fake news and unrealistic self-expectations or self-soothing by using social media and obsessive compulsive or other unhealthy coping mechanisms. So this can be really hard for parents to do. And I think that, again, you got to hear me up front. Smartphones and social media are not evil in and of themselves, just like a car is not bad. But we are using social media platforms as an experimentation ground. It's basically like putting kids in a car going down the road, down the information superhighway, going 90 miles per hour in an experimental prototype vehicle with no seatbelt. Like, we would never do that. We would never toss the car keys to our 11-year-old and say, hey, be careful, I'm trusting you. Like, just, you know, be safe, be smart. And they don't know what it is, but this is what we do when we give social media or screens, not even just social media, when we let our kids watch things unsupervised on YouTube. And then when something happens, when they encounter something they're not supposed to, when they make a poor decision, then we just stand there exasperated and say, I can't believe you did that. I told you to be careful. And they feel so ashamed, but they don't understand why. And maybe some of you are out there thinking, hey, this really doesn't apply to me because my kid doesn't have a phone yet. But in reality, maybe they do. They have some sort of screen in their face. You cannot go into a grocery store, into a hardware store, into any store anywhere without seeing some sort of screen that's flashing news. I mean, I think about even one time when I went into a nail salon And they were playing an incredibly violent, inappropriate movie. And here are these mothers who have young children in here just watching. If you know me, you know me. I went up to them and said, we are turning this off immediately, turning the channel, changing the channel. But I was so surprised at how many moms were just completely numb to it, not seeing their kids watch these violent acts that were happening on the television. That is not okay. And other kids who see your kid that doesn't have a phone, it is so common when kids get the newest phone, the newest model, they'll give an old one to their child. And this is another question that I've been getting is, I told my child they couldn't have a phone and they took one from a friend. I told my child they couldn't have social media. We found out they've had a secret account for years now. And parents, when this happens to you, your heart sinks and you just feel like you failed, or something has happened that you haven't done something right, or your child has failed and you're so disappointed. But let me tell you that sometimes it's just a failure of decision making. They don't fully understand the ramifications. They are developmentally wired to think, I know better than you do, mom and dad. You don't understand this digital world that we're living in. You just can't imagine what it's like. And bless your heart is what they would say if they're from where I'm from in Texas. They would just say, bless your heart, mom and dad. You just don't know. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. Because kids are developmentally wired to think that they are invincible. And so they may have a secret account. And when you discover that your child has made a mistake, has gone against your rules, then the first thing that you should say to them is, I'm so sorry that this has happened. I'm so sorry you've experienced this. And, you know, I'm upset. And we're going to have to talk about some consequences. But we will find a way through this together. That's really important, rather than we do what's in the parenting handbook. What were you thinking? How could you have done this? And they just feel shame. But the truth is, we all did foolish things growing up, but we don't have to see those moments living on in perpetual digital infamy, right? I mean, I think about when I was in 9th grade, I sneaked out with my friends to wrap a house. Now, never mind, I was so guilt-stricken, I actually led the other girls who had gone with me to kneel in the front yard and pray and ask God for forgiveness. And we unwrapped the house after we wrapped it before I came back to the house and made brownies and cookies for that family to go and to apologize to them because I felt so bad about it. Now, my mom was not tracking my iPhone to see where I'd gone. She just drove down the street and yelled out the car window until she found us. And before caller ID, we would call and tell our parents where we were. Need I say more? Ways to hide simply evolve and they become normalized. So we have to press against that. So I'm talking to you about how to be the parent and how to build relationships. There is nothing that can substitute healthy relationships in the heart of your child as far as their impact on decision making. It impacts how they view their faith, how they'll view God, how they'll view everything. And we have such opportunity. And maybe you were raised for such a time as this to parent right here, right now. And I'll be right back with more encouragement on the other side of this break.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends, we are talking all things social media today. I've gotten so many questions, and this just seems to be a continued battle that we are facing. But let me give you this reminder. You only have 6,574 days. 6,574 days is the number of days from when your child is born until when they turn 18 and they become an adult. And if you think about those days, that equates to 6,574 bedtime tuck-ins, 2,340 school lunches, 65 days of spring break, 54 months of summer, 18 birthdays, and one chance in a lifetime. Think about how many days, and I'm talking days, friend, days, do we waste on our screens when we could be pouring into our kids. And it's convicting to me. I share this all the time on my iPhone as I'm walking into church every Sunday morning. It will give me a reminder of how many days I have spent on my phone when you add up all of those hours together. Now, some of those things are essential, but certainly not all of them are. And so how do we as parents navigate this swiftly moving current? It can be really difficult. And so I want to give you some tips. I'm going to give you 10 tips, actually, for safe and healthy social media use. So first of all, I will say that kids, you should wait as long as possible. And actually, when my oldest daughter wanted social media when she was around the early high school years, was the second time that she had wanted it. You can read about the first time in my book, Behind Closed Doors, but when I said a definite no. But this time I had her write a paper. I'm a professor, so she had a rubric and she had all of these prompts. And I, you know, was feeling pretty good about it. It was pretty lengthy. And what do you do if you see this on the platform? What would you post? What would you not post? What's your obligation to report? How do you keep yourself safe? What are your rules for friends? I mean, I had a long list of questions. And she wrote me a pretty, you know, single-spaced, beefy 3-page report. And when she came back to me, I read the report and she got it. She got it. Like every question she was answering. And by the time she got to the end of the report, the conclusion actually shocked me. She said, "After doing this research, I realized that I am not ready for a social media account and I respectfully decline one at this time." Let me tell you, it was one of my proudest parenting moments, although I was really humbled a little bit too. And that's where I really started to understand that bringing our kids into our decision-making, empowering them to seek out some of this information on their own and to be able to walk alongside us and see why we're making that decision and to understand it, it's very powerful because they feel like they can have a say in it. Now, sometimes as parents, we have to be an absolute no, but sometimes we can really let them walk alongside us. But the bottom line is that no kid should even have a conversation about social media until they're at least 13. That is the age that is set by the Children's Online Privacy Act, COPPA, and that is the box that you have to check on almost every single social media platform to verify that you're that age. And when we say, okay, you can check it, I'll watch it, what we're communicating to our children is that it's okay to break the rules. It's okay to bend the rules, you know? And we may think, oh, I'm a vigilant parent and my child's responsible. But the law doesn't make exception for vigilant parents and responsible kids. And what I've seen in my clinical practice is kids who experience great harm on these platforms and they're not 13. And so by violating the terms of use, they have voided any protection available to them. And then they can almost be in trouble for using those platforms. But if your teen is ready and how you know they're ready shouldn't be based on their age. You shouldn't say, okay, you can have it when you're 13 or when you're 15 or when you're 17. All of these privileges should be, you can have it, you can have this privilege when you demonstrate this responsibility and make it a very clear transaction between you and your child that this is what they have to have. Now, one of your kids may have social media at 13 with no problem. Another one might be 18 and still waiting. And that's okay to set different standards for your kids and say you're each wonderfully unique and individual. And as a parent, it is my privilege and my joy to respond to each of you individually and don't have any of that pressure. But you let so-and-so do it when they were this age. But signs that you can see that they might be ready is if they have generally a good self-esteem, if they're not struggling with anxiety or depression or suicidal thoughts or self-harm or any of those things. If they have any of those things, social media will make it worse despite what they try to tell you. And then you have to think about, are they actively considering new possibilities or exploring new ways of doing things? Do they ask you questions about how things work? Do they consider different viewpoints? Are they very in tune with the feelings of others and recognizing those? Do they share their thought process out loud when they're thinking about a situation that's complex? Are they asking you questions about politics and global concepts and they're asking you about history or things that are happening in the news? Those kinds, and they're wanting to discuss it with you if they're talking about their long-term plans and goals, these are all signs they're developing abstract thinking so they can be better able to assess risk on a social media platform. And so I'm going to give you 10 tips for safe and healthy social media use if they use it. So here's some really practical advice that you can take away with you today. The first thing is to set their account to private. Only about 60% of teens use privacy settings on their social media and their account is public. And they don't even really understand what that means because they think all social media is public. But I would never allow a teen under 18 to have a public account without some serious consideration and, get this, a professional legal consultation to look at the risks of exposure. Honestly, that is how I have experienced the world and harms that I've seen happen to kids, but their account should be set to private. And most of the time when you create an account, it's already set to public. So they're ready to feed information out into the world. You have to make sure that's private. Number two, use stock photos for your profile pictures. So all of the profile pictures on social media are public. So if my kids have social media, I'm telling kids, use a geometric pattern, use a picture of a puppy, use a beach, something that doesn't say, hey, I'm a 14-year-old kid who is vulnerable and looking for attention, because in my work in human trafficking, I know that there are traffickers who pay recruiters to sit on social media all day, every day, and just look for those public profiles of minors, because it is so easy to trick them, to groom them, and to make them think that they have a friendship or a relationship or it's someone that they know. So number one, set account to privates. Number two, use a stock photo for the profile picture. Number three, never friend anyone who isn't your friend in real life. This is something hard and fast that I have. It doesn't matter if they're Johnny's uncle's friend's cousin's brother's girlfriend or the most popular kid in school vetted them. Don't worry about it, Mom. I tell them the rule is only friend your real life friends and never, ever, 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 ever agree to meet a stranger. And when I tell you how many kids I have encountered who willingly go and meet strangers because they think that this is a 15-year-old really attractive guy who's going to be the next star in a boy band who just all of a sudden wants to meet me. How exciting is that? They really do believe these things, and so we talk about that. Number four, don't post personal information. So don't post their birth date. Don't post their school name. Don't post their home address. Don't post school sports team uniforms or schedule. It's really easy if a predator sees a sports team, all they have to do is go look up that schedule and then start showing up there and look for the person. They already know what they look like because they saw them on their public profile and their profile picture. Number five, avoid apps that allow anonymous users. So there are a whole list of apps that you can use, but look at the terms of use. And if this is an app that doesn't require people to verify their identification in some way, these are notorious for predators. And what I see happening a lot is kids will be on a more mainstream social media app, and then they'll say, hey, let's switch over to this. It's more private, or it has this fun feature. That is a red flag. You should tell your kids that is danger, 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 danger. You need to unfriend, block that person, delete them, tell an adult for sure. Number six, create a family media plan, and everybody should stick to it, even you. Designate tech-free zones and tech-free times. Now, in my house, the tech-free zones are the dinner table, absolutely no phones, and my kids will be the first one to call out me or my husband if we have them there. We don't have phones in the car. Hello, we have a captive audience and a time to talk together, so we have agreed on that as a tech-free zone. And our bedrooms are tech-free zones. And that is one of the most important things I think I have done as a parent is to make that for sleep and rest. There are no screens in there. There are no TVs. There are no phones. And really, when you think about that tech-free zone or tech-free time, if you create a family culture that, hey, this isn't our time to be on our devices, then everybody else will start to peer pressure the other one in a good way. You know, like, hey, This is our tech-free zone. This is our tech-free time. You're not supposed to be on your screen. And especially for kids in the privacy of their bedroom, the place that a lot of kids feel safest on earth, they can have a lot of pressure to say things that they are unguarded with, or to send photos that they are unguarded with, and nobody's looking over their shoulder. So in my house, we have no culture of privacy when it comes to screens. Anybody can look at any screen anytime. Everybody has everybody's password. We know that we can go through the phone. Now, I know that kids can still hide things, and that they do. But just creating that culture of accountability makes it that much harder. It's just another guardrail that you put in place. And all of these things are just guardrails to buy you time. It's like when they're really little and you put the little doorknob covers on. Well, that's not foolproof, but it does buy you some time. And when you have layered protection, that is important. Another thing I do is I don't allow other kids to bring phones into my kids' bedrooms. They have to be checked into the kitchen, and they can access them at any time. They definitely can come and talk to their parents or text their parents, but it is not in my kids' bedroom, because I have seen some really tragic things happen from that, just because kids are kids and they don't think. So 6, that was a family media plan. What are our tech-free times? What are our tech-free zones? And I'll be doing this again this summer for tech-free times. One of my sons had a cardboard box, and we would all just put our phones in the literal cardboard box. This was nothing very high tech, but we would keep track of how many hours we had together as a family. 7, model being a good digital citizen. You put your phone down. You listen with your face during your conversation. You adopt healthy boundaries around your phone usage, and teach your teens that, and teach your kids that. That's really, really important to do. 8, set firm boundaries. So talk about, what are your absolutes? There should be no texting and driving, or even thinking about when you're walking. Listen, my kids are the first to call me out. My kids do not walk on the street with their phone. I do. And they will say, "Mother, this is not safe. You cannot walk down the street. You have to look around where you are." And kids do love to teach us things. And I'm grateful that they do, that we can hold each other accountable like that. But really set some boundaries around where and when you're using your phone. Don't let it distract from good sleep. You need to disengage at least an hour before bedtime. What are those boundaries that you need to have? 9, talk about the quality of information on social media. So teens think everything they see on social media is real. And actually, most teens get their primary news source from social media. So you need to be talking to your kids about who they're following and why they're following them, and say, how do you know if they're trustworthy? How do you decide which news sources that you're going to follow? That is really important. We need to talk to them about things like clickbait and phishing and online scams. And 10, recognize and discuss the implications of a permanent digital footprint that impacts their college admission. Listen, I've sat on college admission boards. We absolutely look at social media. You do. It affects military applications, scholarships, coaches, recruiters, employers, and even identity theft. And one momentary indiscretion can create a permanent impact. And so again, if you're thinking of those 10 things and thinking, oh my gosh, I've blown it, I haven't done any of that right, it is always time for new mercies in the morning, because God is so gracious. Because of his great love, we are not consumed, but he gives us new mercies every morning. This is a problem that we have got to fix. And you know, I would give a special shout out to the grandparents there, that this generation of kids, of grandkids, is craving conversation. And grandparents, I know you're really good at that. Don't be afraid to initiate conversation with your grandkids. Ask them open-ended questions. Ask them about what the world looks like to them. Be curious and empathetic. And the more that we cultivate relationship in the hearts of our kids, the more that we can win the war that culture is fighting over them. If we make it our mission to fight for their hearts. That is something that the world does not want. They don't want that. They want the other things, but we can have their heart. Well, may the Lord bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you. And I'll see you tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.